We spoke about the psychology, some aspect of psychology. First, we had a general estimate of current school of psychology, and then some idea of the basic Indian psychological outlook. And I gave you also a rough classification according to the yogic school of practice of yoga. Physical consciousness in the human body, from which the Kundalini rises, is not in the physical body, but in the subtle body. The subtle body is that in which the being goes out in deep trance, or more radically at the time of death. That is the subtle body. So also are all the centers, but as the subtle body penetrates and is interfused with the gross body, there is a certain correspondence between these chakras, means centers of consciousness, and certain centers in the physical body proper. So figuratively, we can speak of the Purusha in this or that center of the body. Well, that makes you some idea of the position of what do you mean by saying that the Purusha is in the heart, or Purusha is in the head, or the subjective consciousness is somewhere in the head. It is not in the physical head or in the brain. That is what the statement of Sri Aurobindo makes clear. Now, before we take up the discussion of the physics of consciousness, the best is to decide what is consciousness, because when you speak of psychology, you speak of mainly consciousness. And then you have to make clear conception consciousness. So that is exactly the point at issue. Is consciousness only material, a result of inconscient matter? Or is consciousness something self-existent? You see, on that point hinges the whole basis of psychology of man. If we say that the basis of what man is, or what we know or feel or experience as consciousness, is only vibration of inconscient matter, then we take a one line of approach to human psychology. If we understand, know, or accept that psychology, consciousness in man is not a result of only material, mechanical, inconscient vibrations of matter, but is something that is conscious, then we take another line of approach to human psychology. Well, there is exactly the point of departure. And I want to make out a little case for a more spiritual basis of consciousness. Because consciousness is the fundamental fact of the cosmos or the universe, as I told you in the second talk when we began it. It is knowledge and power at the same time. When you say consciousness, you imply knowledge, also power. It means it is light and force at the same time. Consciousness has light of awareness, and it is a power of will and execution. So that when we say consciousness, we mean to say that there is knowledge and power, there is light and force. It is the inherent power of infinite being or infinite existence. What is consciousness? Power of being, power of existence. Existence is infinite. Existence is the ultimate reality, because what we notice is existence. Stone is there because it exists. Exists to our consciousness naturally. Whether it has a consciousness is afterwards a question which we'll solve. But existence, then existence cannot be without consciousness. So that consciousness is the inherent power of infinite existence, infinite being. We have already seen that existence cannot be without consciousness. It has its inherent force or energy. It is this that has filled the infinite space and eternal time. Eternal time with its cosmic rhythms. This consciousness has filled infinite space and eternal time with its rhythm. It is this infinite consciousness, force, that has filled with its cosmic rhythms infinite space and eternal time. its main rhythms are sevenfold. We see this, we as human consciousness cognize or understand or come in contact with seven rhythms of this cosmic consciousness, of this infinite consciousness that is at work. The main rhythms are sevenfold, cognizable by human consciousness. Mind or mental consciousness, of which man is the vehicle and representative, is not the whole of this cosmic consciousness and its rhythm. The consciousness that is at work in the universe is not confined to mental consciousness. The whole limitation of modern psychology consists in beginning to believe and feel that consciousness means mind. This is a half-truth and a dangerous limitation. Consciousness is not all mind. Consciousness is much wider than mental consciousness, of which man is a vehicle and representative. Yes. And it is not the whole of the cosmic rhythm. All consciousness is not mental, not intellectual, not human. Consciousness stretches beyond mind and below mind. There are psychologists who affirm that an individual point of reference is necessary and indispensable for consciousness. This is the stand of Jung, one of the famous psychologists of modern times. It is he who says that collective unconscious is the basis of all that happens in mankind. Now here the mistake lies in believing that all consciousness is mental. All consciousness is human. Otherwise, reducing all to a collective unconscious would not be without any meaning. Consciousness does not require a point of reference at all for its operations. Not all consciousness. You can say human consciousness requires a particular individual subjective point of reference. But all consciousness, he defines in his book, that collective unconscious cannot be consciousness, because consciousness always requires an individual point of reference. There must be some I to whom all consciousness must refer. This only refers to the human realm. This only refers to the human belt. It has no reference to the whole range of consciousness. You see, and there, now you'll see that therefore the basis of man's consciousness is the collective unconscious. This is what he has reduced the whole human psychology to. The basis of all human psychology is collective unconscious. But this is a view, this is to view the problem in its isolation. That is to say, from the point of view of evolution from below, he is viewing the whole process of consciousness from the inconscient. And that is a mistake which all modern schools of psychology are committing. That they look at consciousness from the point of view of inconscient. That inconscience is the basis. Now from that, how has consciousness come? Consciousness precedes all that you are conscious of. You cannot have the world without the consciousness preceding the creation of the world. Well, here, how could that which is collective unconscious? Now look, this is a problem which Jung does not solve, to which he has no answer to give. How could that which is the collective unconscious become in man, either collective consciousness or individual consciousness? You say all is reduced to the collective unconscious. Now how does that manage to become conscious either in human collectivity or human individuality? How does it manage to become become conscious? It is collective unconscious. You say whole psychology of man is reducible to collective unconscious. All right, the collective unconscious, apart from the question as to where this collective unconscious resides, what is the substratum of this collective unconsciousness? Is it matter? Is it in conscience or is it consciousness? Apart from that, the question does remain, how does collective unconscious manage to become individual consciousness in man, collective consciousness in the human being? How does it manage from unconsciousness to suddenly transform itself into consciousness? Isn't it? Well, this for this, he would say, it gets a point of reference. How does it get? It's no use stating. He would say that because this consciousness got a point of reference. How did the point of reference come? How did this individual I come into being? His book on personality clearly admits that the roots of personality, I'm quoting his sentence almost, the roots of personality are veiled in mystery. This is Jung accepting that personality cannot be explained. Two children born in the same family, brought up under same conditions, same social and all kinds of same environment. How do they happen to differ? Parentage being the same. You cannot explain this by merely saying the consciousness point of reference has come. How does it differ so much? Two brothers, one a genius and another an idiot. How does it happen? So no use, you see. So how does that I point of reference happen to come into being? Personality, he says, yes, it is inexplicable. It is mystery. It is a mystery in that sense. If you look at it from the inconscient, it will always remain a mystery. The solution of it lies in accepting the fact that the inconscient from which you start to read or understand or comprehend human psychology is the other end. The other end is there of total consciousness, an infinite conscious power of being, an absolute power of being that has brought the rhythms of world into existence. It is that which is really responsible for what happens here to us appearing as inconscient. Well, this brings into prominence the question, which came first, the universal or collective consciousness or the individual? If you say collective unconscious, when your point of reference came into being, did the collective point of reference come into being or the individual? Who was first, the collective consciousness or the individual? It seems evident that it is the universal or the collective that precedes the individual. In fact, it manifests in the individual its power of multitudinous variation. And for this, you can go back to other levels of consciousness, not the human one, but let us go below the level of the consciousness available to man, and you will see that there it is easier to make out, clearly to observe that consciousness is first collective, and it is from the collective that the individual takes his variation or stand as a subjective point of manifestation of the collective. The view that equates all consciousness to mental consciousness is partial, and it can be easily seen if we look at the unique world of vegetable life. You look at the vegetable kingdom, the kingdom of all the biological, manifestation of the vegetable kingdom, and also the insect and the animal world. There is consciousness there. We cannot say that it is not conscious. It is conscious. All right, there you observe. You will see there that this view which equates all consciousness to mental consciousness is partial. It's not true. It's not correct. There, the consciousness is life energy in the vegetable kingdom. Consciousness there works as life energy. And it finds expression in the universal and throws itself out in group, manifesting a common characteristic, and then in each group again there is an infinite variation at work, so much so that one plant could be said to be an individual variation of the group. A collective consciousness that manifests has life energy in the whole vegetable world. Then you get one cosmic energy as life energy in the vegetable kingdom into classes. Different classes of vegetation, different biological orders, as you would call it, orders of the vegetable kingdom. Well, each order has its common characteristics, genus and species. Each order has its common quality, characteristic, power. And in each again, each order, there is an individual variation so as to make it possible for us to identify one rose from all the groups of roses. A plant of rose from thousand plants of rose can be identified, so that there is a common characteristic, a collective life energy at work, a collective life consciousness at work with common characteristic, a group which takes a particular characteristic, and in the group again an individual which can be identified, a variation on the play of common, qualities. Now there you see that the cosmic or the collective consciousness precedes the creation of the individual. The individual does not create the class. The vegetable kingdom as a vegetable kingdom is an expression of Consciousness is life energy. Now, this life energy is universal and common. And on the play of this common life energy comes into expression an individual variation. So that the individual does not create the collectivity, the collective consciousness creates or manifests itself in the individual. There you see the collective precedes the individual. Now here, so much so that a plant could be identified. The same is true of the insect and the animal consciousness. There, collective consciousness precedes the creation of the universal point of reference. Even there, the universal point of reference comes into being afterwards, not first. Yeah. Consciousness power, as we call it in Indian parlance, Chit Shakti, throws itself out in multiple rhythms, seven main rhythms that are possible of experience by human being. It has become here, so to say, first, this cosmic rhythm, the play of consciousness power, seems to have thrown itself out here in the form of the earth consciousness and has there entered into what might be called a dumb trance. The cosmic conscious power has thrown its rhythm into earth consciousness, and the earth consciousness there it has become entered into what might be called a trance, a dumb material trance, if you like, from which infinite energies are working with a mass. They are not conscious. Energies are working in the earth consciousness with a mass. They are not conscious. They don't seem to us to be conscious. They seem to be working with a mass, and they have created innumerable fields of infinite realm of matter with all the functions that indicate the presence of a veiled will. After all, when you study the operation of material energy in matter, dumb, unconscious, and according to scientists, inert matter, what you find is that there, the operation of energy shows the operation of the conscious will. After all, it doesn't seem to be absolutely so unconscious as to submit to the dictation of mind. Matter seems to dictate to mind rather than be dictated by mind in its ultimate and essential constitution. You cannot order matter to behave as you like, as mind like. You cannot say, you are inert, oh matter, you have no consciousness. Therefore, just do what I tell you. Give me water from sulfur and iron. Well, matter will say, no, I can't give you water from sulfur and iron. For water, you must take hydrogen and oxygen, isn't it? So that it is as if there was a decision and a will at work in what appears to us an inconscient working of energy in dumb material existence, which is veiled consciousness working at some end, which is there, not known to us by mind, but certainly conscious in its operation and definite and decisive in its will. We can take advantage of the processes of this matter. We can understand what it does and make a factory out of it, make a scientific experiment out of it, and apply it to life and make ourselves happy. But by that, we are not dictating to matter, please understand. Our mastery of matter proceeds only up to the processes, not to the constitution of matter. We only have mastery of process by understanding, experiment, and application in life. But it is not as if we had now got, a sort of a master by which we could make matter do whatever we like. We can do it only by obeying what matter is doing by our own constitution. If you know that rubbing two pieces of wood produces fire, you can say, now I want to subtilize this process and produce fire without rubbing wood. But I know that fire can be produced by a violent vibration in matter. That's all. Or you can say that electricity is produced in a certain way. Well, I will try to devise a new process by which I can get an electric current. But you are not creating electricity. Matter cannot be created. That is scientific position. Matter is indestructible, uncreatable. You cannot create matter. You cannot destroy matter. You see, on that the whole scientific basis, the edifice is built up. This energy seems to work with a sort of a veiled will. An involved consciousness, if you like to call it. There is a consciousness, but which is involved. the same conscious power, the chit shakti, as I told you, well, throws itself out into innumerable varied rhythms of life force, creating collective life consciousness. It created a sort of inconscient material working out of a dumb energy. Then it struggles itself and throws itself out into innumerable varied rhythms of life force, creating collective life consciousness, or, if you like to say, giving rise to what can be termed collective life soul. A collective life soul is created. The vital soul in the insect, the bird, and the animal kingdom. In the insect, the bird, and the animal kingdom, the collective life soul seems to have been created by this rhythm of the consciousness power, which is at work in the cosmos or in beyond the cosmos even. The consciousness power has thrown itself out in universal mental consciousness, giving rise to varied states of mental energy. And there, she has succeeded in creating a self-aware point of mental, vital, and physical consciousness. In the mental expression of this conscious power, the power succeeds in creating an individual point of reference. And this individual point of reference called man is mental, vital, and physical in his consciousness. He takes up the material consciousness, he takes up the vital consciousness, he adds the mental consciousness. He is a composite of mind, life, and matter. Yes. The first emergence here we see of a subjective self in the universe. The play of universal mind, the play of consciousness of universal mind, here becomes very complex. In the animal, you at once see that in the beehive or in the herd, there is a common instinct to which all the individuals are subjected. You easily see that. In man, you don't see that he is subject to universal mind. Nobody perceives it, and this is called ignorance. If you study a beehive or an anthill or a herd of animals, you immediately know that it has a collective entity. And all members obey the need of their collective entity instinctively. They have an instinct, they know. And the whole group behaves in a way as if the whole knew, and each one knew what the whole required. In man, the play becomes tremendously complex. This mind coming into being and creating an individual point of reference which was not there in the animal and the insect kingdom, and this creation of self-aware individuality of the subject creates a complex play. And this complex play, well, hides that great truth that each individual mind is nothing else but a particular application of universal mind. It is not known and not consciously felt. Well, this creates what we call ignorance and complexity of many problems. Problems of man are due to this fact that he does not know that his mind and his life and his body are nothing else but a result of cosmic mind, the cosmic life, and universal matter. He doesn't start with that, then it would be easy for him to know. But that is exactly now a work which is set before him. So to a problem, yes, it becomes complex. Then tends to lose sight of the universal and acts as an isolated center of consciousness. It is that which creates the complexity of human problems. And yet, the spiritual consciousness force that is working here has produced remarkable rhythm of slowly growing collective life. Here, the conscious power or chit shakti has not left the individual alone in the labyrinth of his own egoistic movement, forgetful of the cosmic consciousness. It has forced an evolution of collective consciousness here in man. Beginning from a small unit, the family, to the realized consciousness of the nation, the collective consciousness of the race, which has played a remarkable part in molding the life of man on earth today. So that when he was oblivious of the collective mind, he was compelled to create or evolve a collective consciousness. From his individuality itself, he was forced to enter into a vaster collective being in the family, in the tribe, in the clan, in the nation. And these are realized, collective entity. So that the collectivity is forced on man through his subjectivity. His subjectivity is taken into account. It is not thrown away, steamrolled, so to say. Nature does not crush it and say, oh, this does not realize the cosmic consciousness, I will crush it. No, it forces it gradually to expand its ego limits and widen out into a vaster and vaster, larger and larger unit of collective life. Till it has now come to the nation unit, which is the realized unit of collective life today. Not only that, but humanity, the highest and the largest unit of realizable to human your consciousness here on earth is already, making its appearance, the oneness of human race or oneness of humanity. And it is already the beginning of what is to us the new age. The new age consists in the realization of the largest possible unit of collective consciousness, the human race. An age of vaster collective consciousness than what man has known throughout the course of his history. The consciousness, which is power, has rhythms that are potential to the earth consciousness also. This does not exhaust all the rhythms of that conscious power which is at work in the universe. The earth consciousness, the life soul, the human individual and the mental consciousness, they do not exhaust all the rhythms of the conscious power which is at work. The conscious power has rhythms that are potential to this earth consciousness manifested in man, whose vibrations have already been felt by humanity throughout its course of history. Man has not been completely ignorant of the greater vibrations of this rhythm beyond mind. Man has known the rhythms beyond mind, and throughout the course of history, it is those rhythms that have given man his highest cultural creations in his poetry, his art, his inspiration for creating more and more perfect forms of life. There you see that man has known something beyond the rhythm which is already at work, because there is a potential rhythm already operating to manifest itself here, already working out so that it can be expressed here. Man's conscious cooperation in ascending to that plane where these higher rhythms originate, and his effort to in bringing down that vaster realm here and establishing it as a permanent element of earth consciousness is the true significance of the universal feeling of the dawn of the new age which humanity is feeling today. The real significance of this feeling that a new age is coming consists in ascending to conscious cooperation in making the ascent. That is one. And bringing it down, bringing that vaster realm of consciousness here down and establishing it as a permanent element of earth consciousness. That is the real meaning of the new age that is coming, not only the fissioning of atom and going out into space and going to the moon. That is only the preliminary of what must happen in consciousness first. It is true. Not that there are no difficulties and obstacles to the coming of this dawn, but already the clouds have been dispersed in the inner worlds, and some streaks of light have been seen. To be successful in penetrating the gloom of the prevailing situation in humanity today, well, this as far as consciousness and aspect of consciousness is concerned. Now I take up some work of clarifying the psychological implication of this step. If you take up the stand of consciousness, now if you take up this consciousness,
you want to be over there
for some time anyway. of consciousness. Now, from the point of view of consciousness, as regards the human being, you will see that to the human being, there is a super conscient. Then the conscient and the subconscient. Now, to the conscient, you can add the subliminal. Conscient, you can add, if you like, the inconscient. The consciousness power or the insern, infinite consciousness power, chit shakti is concerned, you can feel it as a superconscient, conscient, subconscious. Now, as a addition or additional movement of the conscient, there you can see the subliminal, also the subconscious operating in the conscious, so that these are not isolated from each other. The subconscious act on the conscient, the conscient tries to ascend to the superconscient, the superconscient tries to descend to the conscient, the conscient tries to influence the subconscient. The inconscient is turned into the subconscient, and the subliminal influences the whole working of the subconscient and the conscient. Let's see. You can say that there is an interplay of all the forces. It is not as if we are analyzing this for our mind to make the point clear. It is not that these are cut and dried steps unconnected with each other. When we say superconscient, it acts on the conscient. When we say the conscient, it tries to ascend to the superconscient. When we say the conscient, it is influenced by the subconscient, and it also influences the subconscient. You see, when you say the subliminal, well, it influences the conscience, and the conscience is influencing the subliminal. In the same way, the inconscient is also influencing the subconscious. Well, like that, that is one way of classifying. Well, that shows you one way of looking at this problem. Consciousness and its, realms. Now you take another view. You look at this problem from the point of view of, say, cosmic consciousness, let us say. That was conscious power of the infinite. Now we take cosmic consciousness. If you take cosmic consciousness, you will have to consider it in two points. Okay? You have a line of descent here and line of ascent here. Apart from the fact that the cosmic consciousness has a double aspect of passivity and activity, are two aspects of the same consciousness. Now, in the descent, that is to say, it's coming down, you find here the absolute, but the first line of descent when it takes place, you can say it is felt or known as Satchidananda. Infinite being, infinite consciousness and power, consciousness and power. That is the three things, but descends into the truth, descends as truth consciousness. Truth consciousness, which Jarno called the Veda, called the Rita Chitti, truth consciousness or supermind. And that descends into overmind, or descends as overmind. That descends as mind. And that works out as life. And that further descends into, well, you can call it matter. And below matter, you have the inconscient. Cosmos. All these are universes. All these are universe of truth consciousness, a universe which is overmind, a universal world which is vital, a universe which is matter or material. That is what the Upanishad said when it said Annam Brahma. It said Prano Brahma. Life is the infinite. Mind is the infinite and so on. Well, that gives you an idea of the descent of this consciousness absolute as transcendent, supramental, mental, vital, material inconscient. Now the line of ascent begins with inconscient here, you see. Inconscient is the beginning. And the first ascent is matter. And then the second ascent is life. The third ascent is mind. The fourth ascent in gold or expected is over mind. And still higher, what is expected is the supermind or truth consciousness. And beyond it, it will rise into the Sachidananda. This cosmic scheme of manifest consciousness, each is a world, each is a plane, each is full of infinite, characterized by the quality of that plane. All things in the mind partake of qualities and powers and capacities of mind. There are beings, energies and forces that manifest and express mental energy. There are beings and forces that express life energy. Innumerable people, when they think as if the earth here and what we see is the whole of life, they do not know what is life. Life is far, far greater than what is manifested here on earth. We are conscious only of life here. But life is also here, far, far vaster than the life which is here. And this life communicates with this life here. This is cosmic life, you see. So that from the cosmic belt, all the time influences go and, well, influence penetrate this earth globe. You see, all the time there is a penetration. And action and reaction is taking place all the time. That also makes the play or the ascent. Now man is here today. Man is standing here today. And from here he has to also take help of the cosmic movement here and rise to the over mental consciousness. Now that is one way of looking at it, a second way of classification. You see where you regard the process of ascent, the process of ascent. There is a third way of looking at it. There are so many ways. This is only mind trying to understand psychology. It is not that these exist as sharp distinction in analytical parts, you see. This is not to say that, this is divided. There is no division. The whole thing is like a wave, you see, passing from one to the other. You can't say that this has no connection with this and this is not connected with that. When we say mind or matter or life and so on, it is for our mind and clear understanding that we say matter. But there is no matter in which there is no life. There is no life in which there is no mind. There is no mind in which there is no matter. Like that. It will be always a complex play of all, on all points at the same time. But we are trying mentally to understand and make some clarification for our intellect. Then for the time being, we make a classification, make an analysis which helps us to understand. It is not as if we are dividing and analyzing human being or consciousness or psychology into, parts which have no connection with each other. Now you take a third stand. Take up the human being. You see, if you take up the human being, now I have a rough idea of the human, vertebral column, so as to make it a little clear. Now, in this there will be a difficulty, so I will put another here also for us to understand, a hyperbola. You have a hyperbola and in this here I will put another aspect of man so as to make the point clear, a little more clear. It's too small, but anyway. You have to make a small hyperbola and another hyperbola here, you see, yes, that line. And here you can put all, you see, human individual. And then make a connection like that. You see, now this hyperbola is up. You don't see the other lines which extend beyond, you see. Now here, this is mind. When you come here, you come to the emotional being of man. From here, you come to the vital being in man. You come here, lower vital being in man. Lower vital. And when you come here, you come to the physical. You see? Now this, when it's turned out, it is external mind. When you turn inward, you call it the subliminal or inner mind, if you like. You call it inner mind. You see, when this emotional being, for instance, is turned outward, it is extroverted. When it's turned inward, it goes into the subliminal emotional being. The vital being, when it turned outward, is like that. And when it's turned inward, it enters the subliminal vital. The same thing happens to the physical. Now, behind this activity of the mind, behind directly the emotional being, and behind also the vital being, there is what Sri Aurobindo calls the psychic being of man, the true soul. That is the soul entity. You can call it the psychic being. This is really the one that can influence the mind, can influence the vital. But see, that is really the true vital. This is the true individuality in man. There is a mental individuality here, which is personality or mental person, which is egoistic and natural. This is personality which is natural. This personality is natural, egoistic. It's not egoistic. This is the true individual in the sense of identical with the divine. Because it is in direct contact with the supermind. You see here, directly it opens to the level above. Whereas this natural personality, mental or vital or emotional, but these are all egoistic natural personalities, necessary for growth in ignorance, but ultimately to be governed by this true being which is behind. When that awakens, then man becomes conscious of his true self, true of his true purpose in life, and then can pursue the path of growth of consciousness, not merely acquiring knowledge of facts, not merely intellectual philosophy, but widening of consciousness. Because this consciousness is already in contact with the higher consciousness, the supreme consciousness, the divine consciousness. And it can bring down the power, the illumination, and the all the working of the divine into this true individual first, and lead the mind, lead the emotional being, lead the vital being to manifest and express that which is coming from above, from the divine. That is the problem. Now, the human individual, the one way of looking at it is to divide the human being into mind, emotional being, vital being, lower vital, and the physical. And behind all the activity of nature like that, a psychic being, true soul, which is in communication with the divine, and which can, at present it does not. Now, that is man's problem. This is ignorance when he is identified with all his personalities here and is oblivious of the true center inside. When he becomes conscious of the true center, then his mental being, vital being, emotional being, and the physical being try to be governed or allow themselves to be governed by the true individual, which is one with this divine being or divine entity. You see, that is man's problem, you can say. Now, that way is one way of looking. The fourth way of looking at it is that I must represent that hyperbola better, you see. Now you take up this hyperbola, which is of the infinite. Infinite realm of Satchidananda, you see. That is called in mathematical the realm of the infinite. Now there is a connecting link, a square called the supermind or truth consciousness. Truth consciousness. And this is connected with the lower hyperbola, where mind is the highest term, life is the middle term, and matter is the lower term. You see? Now here is man. Here is the animal kingdom, you can say. And here is material world, you see? And then man has now, when you say mind here, only mind I must put here, really. And then when you put man here, then man has got here in this world his mental being, his vital being, and his physical being connected with these universal aspects of the same. And this mind can open here. He can consciously open to this consciousness and bring down something of the, you see, then the ascent of spoke, the ascent to the infinite consciousness will be accompanied by and followed by a descent into mind, descent into life, descent into physical being of this infinite light, this Satchidananda and the truth consciousness. First it will be truth consciousness, afterwards it will be Satchidananda. The first step of out of ignorance is the movement of mind into truth consciousness. When man has broken this lid which divides the mind from the truth consciousness, he will be able to ascend here. When he ascended, he will be able to bring down the light and the consciousness and will of the truth consciousness into his mind, into his life, into his physical being. Then on earth, now here is the earth, a new principle will be established, this principle of the supermind. Up till now, mind is the only thing established in earth consciousness. You follow? Now, the connection is between this, because the infinite is always one. This is only a schematic thing, because there are no two infinite. This is not infinite, and that is another infinite. It is this very infinite which is here felt as inconscient. Really speaking, this inconscient is Satchidananda. This inconscient, there is only one infinite. Please remember, mathematically, there can be two infinities. So, parabola is the supernal of the infinite, Satchidananda. And this is the infinity of matter, inconscient infinite. But inconscient infinity is or trance of the Satchidananda as matter or as inconscience, you see. So that there is only one consciousness force that is working, guiding the course of evolution of mankind. Well, this gives us a schematic. Now I'll give you a few quotations which will give you an idea of what Sri Aurobindo believes to be consciousness, because I have developed the point. Of course, it is from his writing, but still I must give you his own idea of consciousness in his own words, so that you have the most authentic exposition of what is consciousness by the greatest living spiritual incarnation of the world today. Yes, that I am not exaggerating at all. So that you have something absolutely authentic by a man who was the clearest intellect, the widest mind, the subtlest, you know, capacity to understand, philosophize, to see, to write, to read, to think, and to analyze. There is no mind that is superior to the mind of Sri Aurobindo. I challenged it in England, and I challenged in Europe, and I challenged it everywhere, because I know that intellect for intellect, there is no greater intellect. And as for experiment on psychology, he devoted 40 years to this task. It's not one day's work. One man sitting in a room and writing out, oh, this I believe. It is a work done first on himself, then on dozens of people, then hundreds of people, and a generalization is arrived at. So that the people who claim to be psychologists, modern schools of psychology, who are writing cupboard full of books, without even knowing who they are. And his first sentence with which he began was, psychology is a subjective science, and in it you proceed from the knowledge of yourself to the knowledge of others. The psychologists today do not know themselves. And how can they know other people, except you can dabble in other people, as people always do dabble. Unconsciously, everybody dabbles in other people's affairs. Parents dabble in the affair of children. The municipal people dabble in the affair of the city. The voters dabble in the affair of politics. The politicians dabble in economics. The economists dabble in all kinds of things, isn't it? So that is nothing new. If psychologists say that they are doing marvelous work, it is dabbling with other people. They are not solving any problem, because they themselves don't know who they are. To proceed on the basis that vibrations are taking place in brain and become thought by electrical discharges is not to know what is a thought. See, here is somebody who has experimented on this, on himself, and then given a view with an intellectuality which is absolutely capable of an impartiality which very few intellect today can claim. Here is somebody who waited for 18 years before he even gave his first generalization. 18 long years of experimentation. Then only he thought, well, now I can give something as an impartial, you know, proposition to be accepted by the world. Now here is something what he says of consciousness. the word of consciousness in Indian psychology is chitta. Chitta is a consciousness including mind, vital, and the physical. But practically, it can be taken to mean something central in consciousness. If that is centered, it follows more or less quickly as a natural consequence. This is from Tome 1, page 253. Consciousness is not, to my experience, a phenomenon dependent on reactions of personality to the forces of nature and amounting to no more than a seeing or interference. If that were so, then when the personality becomes silent and immobile and gives no reactions, as there would be no seeing or interpretative action, there would therefore be no consciousness. That contradicts some of the fundamental experience of yoga, which is a silent and immobile consciousness, infinitely spread out, not dependent on personality, but impersonal, universal, not seeing and interpreting contacts, but motionlessly self-aware. That is consciousness. Why should it react? You understand? Yeah. Not dependent on reactions, but persistent in itself, even when no reaction takes place. The subjective personality itself is only a form, which is a power inherent not in the activity of the temporary manifested personality, but in the very being, in the self. Second, consciousness is a reality inherent in existence. Whatever you feel is existence, well, there is always consciousness inherent in it. It is there even when it is not active on the surface, but silent and immobile. It is there even when it is invisible on the surface, not reacting on outward things, but withdrawn and either active or inactive within. It is there even when it seems to us to be quite absent, when the being to our view unconscious and inanimate. You follow, no? Yes. So that the stone is not inanimate. Consciousness is not only power of awareness of self and things. Or it has also a dynamic and creative energy. It can determine its own reactions or abstain from reaction. It can not only answer to forces, but create or put out from itself other forces. Consciousness is chit, but it also is chit shakti, power. Consciousness is usually identified with mind. But mental consciousness is only a human range which no more exhausts all the possible ranges of consciousness than human sight exhausts all the gradations of color. There is the infrared. There is the ultraviolet, which eye does not see. It does not mean that the vibration does not exist or the color is not there below the red and beyond the violet. Well, in the same way, mental consciousness does not exhaust all the range of consciousness. Or human hearing all the gradations of sound, for there is much above and much below, that is to the man invisible and inaudible. Sound barrier and, yes. So there are ranges of consciousness above and below the human range, with which the normal human has no contact, and they seem to it unconscious, supramental, overmental, and submental ranges. See, that is what human beings generally think of them. When Yajnavalkya in the Upanishad says that there is no consciousness in the Brahman state, he is speaking of consciousness as the human being knows it. The Brahman state is that of a supreme existence, supremely aware of itself, Swayam Prakash, lighted by its own self. It is Satchidananda, existence, consciousness and bliss, all in one, triple. Even if it be spoken of as beyond that, the parat param, it does not mean that it is a state of non-existence or non-consciousness. But that it is beyond even the highest spiritual substratum, the foundation above, in the luminous paradox of the Rig Veda, of the cosmic existence and consciousness. As it is evident from the description of Chinese Tao and Buddhistic Shunya, that there is a nothing in which all is. So with the negation of consciousness here, superconscient and subconscient are only relative terms. As we rise into the superconscient, we see that it is a consciousness greater than the highest we have yet had, and therefore in our normal state, inaccessible to us. And if we can go down into subconscious, we find there also a consciousness other than our own, at its lowest mental limit, and therefore ordinarily inaccessible to us. The inconscient itself is only an involved state of consciousness, which, like the Tao or the Shunya, though in a different way, contains all things suppressed within it, so that under a pressure from above or within, all can come out and evolve out of itself, an inert soul with a somnambulist force. Inert soul with a somnambulist force. That is what the subconscious or the collective inconscient should ultimately mean. Not absence of consciousness, but a somnambulist consciousness, a somnambulist force. The gradations of consciousness are universal states, not dependent on the outlook of the subjective personality. Rather, the outlook of the subjective personality is determined by the grade of consciousness in which it is organized, according to its typal nature or its evolutionary state. Another quotation. It will be evident that by consciousness is meant something which is essentially the same throughout, but varied in states, condition, and operation, in which, in some grades or conditions, the activities we call consciousness can exist either in a suppressed or an unorganized or a differently organized state. That is all that we mean by a different consciousness. While in other states, some other activities may manifest which in us are suppressed, unorganized or latent, or else are less perfectly manifested, less intensively extended and powerful than in those higher grades above our highest mental limit. It can always have a plane where powers and qualities and capacities not known to us can always manifest, are present there. It all depends upon where the consciousness places itself and concentrates itself. If the consciousness places or concentrates itself within ego, you are identified with the ego. If in the mind, then it is identified with the mind and its activity, and so on. If the consciousness puts its stress outside, it is said to live in the external being and becomes oblivious of its inner mind, inner vital and inmost psychic being. If that goes inside and puts its concentration and stress there, then it knows itself as the inner being. If it goes still deeper, well, then it knows itself as a psychic being. If it ascends out of the body to the planes where the self is naturally conscious of its wideness and freedom, it knows itself as a self and not as mind, not as life, not as body. It is this stress of consciousness that makes all the difference. That is why one has to concentrate the consciousness in the heart or in the mind in order to go within or to go above. It is the disposition of the consciousness that determines everything, makes one predominantly mental, vital, physical or psychic, bound or free, separated in the Purusha or involved in Prakriti. I think I must stop there, otherwise you might go to sleep.
Something like a lower rate of vibration.
Yes. not merely lower rate of vibration, but it is a descent of consciousness into lower plane of being, you see. And there, the subconscious is not really personal, but universal, you see. There is always a universal subconscious. Subconscious, it does not belong to a man. The psychologists, when they say collective unconscious, they mean something, which is that all that happens in the man as subconscious is property of all. Impulse to, for instance, you know, tendency to disease or certain doubts in the mind, incapacity to believe in a higher possibility. These are in all men, not confined to 1, 2, 3, 5. Everybody, doubt, disbelief, refusal to, you know, to believe that he can be healthy always. No, I must be tired because I have done hard work. That's what people. The subconscious impulse, subconscious suggestion. Suggestion of fatigue, disease or death or inevitability of certain thing happening in the vital or mind. It's all subconscious working in the mind.
That distortion of consciousness feeling. I was going to ask about the descent of knowledge to ignorance.
Yes, I hear you.
The descent of knowledge or absolute truth to ignorance. It's difficult to understand if the multiplicity in one.
Mm-hmm.
The divine was broken up. Mm-hmm. Why evil should enter in if both parts are divine originally? How does evil enter into consciousness?
I first showed you here that creation of the individual was a necessity to create a cognizing center in an inconscient world. Mm-hmm. In any inconscient world, first the dawn came, or the most epoch-making, you know, fact of evolution was the emergence of mind. And emergence of mind also was creation of the problem of ignorance. Now, this is a problem which is set. By whom? Not by man. When you think of, we will come to it in the life divine, because that's another line of explanation as to how the one has become many, or the divine has become inconscient and, created what man feels as ignorance, suffering, evil, deaths, and, you know, all kinds of negation of absolute perfection. Put it like that. How does negation of absolute perfection happen to come into being in a world created by God? It's a very simple problem, very simple to be put. Solution is difficult because man thinks in terms of his mind to solve this problem. And he thinks that the duality must persist to the last. This is not true at all. Duality is a temporary stage imposed in the process of evolution. Because ego had to be created in order to make consciousness possible in a world of inconscient. Now, therefore, this ego acts as a center of the universe rather than as one center of the universal. And this makes possible a great divine potentiality, that when it says, I am the center of the universe, it wants to assert that I am fundamentally divine. And that becomes possible only by its standing on that little infinitesimal point of his ego, his little body and mind and life, and widening out into the cosmic consciousness and ascending to a higher consciousness. And bringing down the light of the divine consciousness, the cosmic consciousness, on that little point of his individual manifestation. Then he becomes a point of light. You follow? I don't know. That's where it is. Yes. It is that which is there. And it is the whole problem is the widening out of human ego consciousness into the potential consciousness, the cosmos and the transcendent. Then the light of the transcendent and the cosmic consciousness penetrates into the mind and life and the physical of the individual, where he, as one of the many, brings real one into manifestation. And then imagine now all the points that are around him, all the many, each becoming a point of light. Then the manifestation that you have is something inconceivable as a perfection.
Yeah, pressure is from higher
Yes, supposing all the individuals here or many individuals here acted and became or succeeded in becoming points of light by widening their ego into the cosmic and the transcendent consciousness and bringing down the light of truth consciousness and will and harmony into their life and each becoming a point of its expression by a nature which is transformed completely, what a manifestation of the divine will there be? Which is really the price of ignorance well paid. The suffering and pride and all that which is, it is that which cannot exist in the Satchidananda is possible here. There it is as potentiality. Here it is a materialized and actualized concrete realization, is it not? And in each point, as he says in the Savitri, the great epic, that each drop of the ocean realizing the ocean. Each drop of the ocean realizing the ocean and the whole play becoming a harmonious play. You see, if each individuality rose to that ascent and brought down the light, then there would be a harmony, there would be a, what you call a symphony. There would not be conflict because it's only one truth that is manifesting through all each point of light. It is not diversity that is difficult. It is only a variation. There is no division and conflict. Separation is not the principle of expression. It is variation on the basic unity. So in a play of variation is not conflict. A rose, yellow rose or golden rose differ from the red rose. Red rose differ from the pink rose. But there is no conflict. Isn't it? On the common basis of a divine consciousness or one, the play of the one varies and brings into expression a rich efflorescence of its own fundamental divinity. Because divinity is inexhaustible. Why should it be only Unitarian unity? That is the problem. People, when they think of monism, they think in terms of Unitarian unity, that all differences have to be wiped out. But differences are not separations and divisions, but variations on the theme of unity. And therefore, they are necessary for a rich manifestation of the one supreme that has brought the world into existence with a purpose, with a will. There is no anti-divinity that has brought the ignorance into play. One omnipresent reality is responsible for whatever is happening. Even ignorance, conflict, and evil, and suffering and everything. And then taking that stand, it is quite possible to explain the universe to ourselves and to try to bring about a possible divine life on earth, which is really the highest destiny possible to man. The highest destiny possible to man is rising into a divine consciousness and creating here a divine life. That is what ultimately the solution points to. Yes, the duality really is there at a temporary stage imposed as a necessary condition for evolving further. Division is not fundamental to the cosmos. It is a temporary stage. So is ignorance.
Say that tension, states of tension between the divine life and the greater consciousness and the vital forces in us. These tensions are powerful and they're meant to be, and they have until they work themselves out, they are very necessary for us. And they're very, very scientific. That is, we couldn't have experience and evolution without tension.
Well, that is one way of looking at it from above. There are two ways. Always hear what I showed you. There also you will see that you can look at the same thing from, as I told in the morning, he looked at the world that is from a world that is to be. Now, most of the people who tackle or think of this problem are overcome by, well, the world is. To them, that is last word, everything now, they don't know what is to be. Well, if you can look at the world from what it is going to be or can become, then you can understand better what is. But if you allow yourself to be overcome by what is, or be occupied with the immediate and the present, well, then you always think that nothing can be done. That is how man thinks. And also, secondly, that unless and until you understand the thing that has to come or the fulfillment in the direction of which man has to grow, unless you know that, you cannot justify the present only by saying, well, the present is necessary, or the tension is necessary, or suffering is necessary. It is necessary when you know why it is necessary. Otherwise, to insist that, for instance, take a sadhak, take a man who wants to progress in his inner life. And if he says, of course, you see, egoism is necessary, desires are necessary, ambition is necessary, so I have to go through. Well, then he will take eternity. Naturally, there is no hurry about it. He will outgrow. What exactly, you see, that after all, all these are necessary. Therefore, let me go through. Well, in that case, he has to do a long span of time. He says, why that is here? I must get out of it. I must not have desires which are insatiable, because desire cannot be fulfilled. It is true, after even believing that he will have sufficient pressure of desire, when he says, I must not have egoism, after even knowing mentally or somewhere in his mind, there will be plenty of egoism left in him to tackle. You understand? It will not go by saying, I don't want egoism. It will be there in sufficient quantity to give him hard work. Yeah. Well, so it is not necessary to justify the play of ignorance in oneself or around, because the justification comes truly only when you go beyond. Justification doesn't come when you are in it, you see. And therefore, for people who are in it or dealing in it, even a yogi who has risen to the higher consciousness, knowing full well that this man requires this ignorance, he will knock it out. He will all the time say, it is stupid, you must get out of it. He knows that he won't be able to get out of it now. But still, because the pressure has to be brought from the higher consciousness to change the equation that is obtaining in nature, you see. You cannot accept the nature equation as if, well, it was going to last and it is good that it lasts. If you want a change for a higher vibration or higher play of harmony or rhythm, well, you have to knock out the rhythm that is ignorant, isn't it? And therefore, even when you have the knowledge that probably he won't be able to get out of the rhythm at once in your mind, but with the higher consciousness, you never know. When the higher consciousness works, it may knock out. It's quite a new play, is it not? You are not putting a mental force and trying to change the rhythm. You are putting a higher force, and you don't know the effectivity of the higher force. It is incalculable. That is what people call grace. Yes. But you bring that higher consciousness to bear upon a problem or upon a situation, and suddenly there is a change. And you find out it has changed. I was thinking this can't be done. Well, it is done. That is why human character is not fixed for spiritual persons. And that is why conventional values, social values have very little place or relative importance in the mind of spiritual persons. They have a value of their own. They don't take human character as fixed. They always know that human being can change with difficulty, but with divine help, they can change quickly also. So you never know what can happen to a man. There is this, what was his name? Saint Augustine, is it not? Saint Augustine, in European culture, in India, there are any number of dozens of persons whose life till yesterday was what you call wicked or wrong or bad or, you know, sinful, and suddenly there is a, like that, about turn. So that can happen. Character is not fixed. Yes, yes. Oh, then that story of Anatole France, which I am reminded of, you know. Procurator of the Judea. Very fine story.
When you travel with the day, he's always ever mentioned the word challenge. Your thought of life. Eventually, both ends of consciousness join, and isn't there where this end and the divine at the other end, and eventually, could they not join in a circle with the stream of consciousness?
Fine. Follow.
Well, as
Kundalini. Oh, yes.
I was wondering about that. I heard about it.
Yes.
Eventually, the
world is like
joining.
Yes, it is. You see, from his point of view, I have not yet come to that passage. Perhaps it has which is coming, or I already given, I don't remember. The true Kundalini is above. You see, it is already awake. That is what Ramakrishna said also to his disciple when he said that, well, I want to do Hatha Yoga. So he said, you should not begin from below, you must begin from above. And you see, begin from above, the Kundalini is always awake here in this Sahasradala. It is already conscious. Bring it down by opening your heart or mind, and then it will knock at the Muladhara, the lower center, and awaken the one that is sleeping in the material, physical, nervous consciousness. When the two join, then there will be change in the nervous, vital, and the physical system, which will be of used for a divine work. Certainly, it can be of great use to the divine work. But it is not that you sit down to begin with the body. Because if you begin only with the body, and if you succeed in awakening the sleeping Kundalini, more likelihood, and I have seen some instances where the vital being not purified, the awakened power is not, well, turned into channels or canalized for higher purposes. It is used for satisfying ambition or ego, or, you know, and then it is misspent, as you say. You have earned $1 million and you have the right to misspend it. He gets it and then he doesn't mind, well, wasting it like that. You can. In spiritual life, it is also possible. But that is what happens unless the vital and the mind is purified completely. Awakening of Kundalini is therefore not safe for ordinary persons. For generally, they don't succeed, won't succeed, but if by a strong aspiration he succeeds, and if the vital and mind are not purified, well, the result is not very happy, to put it mildly. I have seen myself, man doing 15 years of good at yoga, and a sincere man. I mean, he was not insincere when he began, but he didn't know that in his vital there were impurities. And then when the power awoke, he couldn't know what to do with it, you see.
But if you approach it to bring it down from above?
Yes, then it is much safer, because you cannot bring down more than your opening. You see, it will adjust itself. It is like a slot. But it can never, unless you can pull down a great power with some powerful aspiration in one part of your being, while other part is not prepared. And you may have also undesirable consequences. But they are more rare because, first of all, your opening, well, it will be the decisive factor in bringing the play of the higher power. So if your opening is small, only a little vibration or less effective vibration will come. More you open, the more effective vibration will penetrate naturally. Then it will be a safe movement from step to step, you see. There only one danger is that there are people who have got split personality, or, you know, one part more ready than the other part, mind is more prepared than the vital, or the emotional being is more prepared than the vital, then that part can open and pull down a power from above. And then the vital being not ready, there may be a want of balance, and either he may lose his mental balance, or he may even misuse this higher power. That can also possibly. See, it can happen. So in this process, the safety suggested is that you depend upon the aspiration from the heart or from the mind, upon your sincere rejection of all the play of ignorance that you notice, and upon your power of surrender. That is how Sri Aurobindo puts it, and Mother, you see. They say the safest way is yoga, if you want to follow yoga. The safest way would be if you can be sincere in your aspiration, sincere in your rejection of all that you notice in your nature as ignorant. You will be made to notice it. Please note, it is not for you to say, I want to notice. You will be made to notice imperfections. This is the inevitable law of spiritual growth, that when you aspire for the light will come. When you inspire, you see, sincerely aspire, the light will come and show you what is undesirable and what is to be rejected. Well, then you have to reject it. If you can't reject, you take the help of the divine to reject it. You pray to the divine, or ask for his help, appeal to the divine to help you in rejecting ignorance, whatever it is noticed. in the mind egoism, in the vital impulse or ambition or greed or hatred and anything that you notice. Well, you when you notice it, you reject it. That's all. Because then you know that it is in you, because it is all in the universe. You don't worry about other people. You worry about yourself, first of all, isn't it? Then you reject it. And when you reject sincerely, you surrender to the divine and implore the divine to change you, to be in you, so to say, to take hold of your being and to guide you, to give you the path or to give you the fulfillment or fulfill his will in you. That's all. That is safety. There is no danger in this process. Anybody can do in any situation of life. It is not necessary to go to the jungle for doing that. It's not necessary to go to the hills or to the forest. One can practice it right down where he is. Indeed, the will might be lacking. Well, I think you go also to sleep.